Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Do you like nerdy stuff? Of course you do. Want to see someone make that stuff, but smaller? Sculpting Minis, Tabletop Terrain, Props, Puppets, and Tutorials, a crafting channel for all things nerdy. Join me over on YouTube at Niche Crafts, where I make stuff about stuff.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Tabletop. I'm your host, Nick, and today joining me is Derek from How Not to GM. If you like this podcast, you're probably going to like that one better. You do a great podcast, Derek. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came up with How Not to GM and like what the or DM and what the concept is, I guess.
Yeah. First of all, let's not overpromise and underdeliver. It's a good show. I don't know if it's better than Tabletops. We'll call them equal. Thanks for the intro, Nick. My name is Derek. I started the show in April, or was it May of 2021? It's kind of all fuzzy that far back in the before times. And yeah, I had been playing tabletop games for a while at that point and really enjoyed engaging with actual play content, with podcasts, with streams and that kind of thing, and thought, you know what would be really fun is if I could talk to the people who are running these games and pick their brain about all the little things they're doing that I am noticing because I run games as well, right? I'm learning new techniques. I'm getting ideas from them. So it'd be really fun to talk to them about how, you know, their brain works and why they're making the decisions they do as they're running these games. So that was really the genesis of the show. It started off as a blog, which not a lot of people read and not a lot of people wanted to fill out a whole form of, you know, like, you know, write something for me. So one friend said, hey, can we just record this? And I said, yeah. And then I said, okay, now that we've recorded this, how hard is it to publish this as a podcast? So the rest is history. But yeah, I've been doing it for a while now, coming up on 3 years, which sounds kind of crazy to say, but it's been a ton of fun along the way. I've gotten to talk to a lot of my favorite DMs and GMs around the web. I've been able to talk to some, you know, people who I have met from you know, doing a show and that kind of thing, you know, friends I've made along the way. And I've learned so much. And I know the people who've been listening along have learned a lot, too, about running games and also about all of these awesome projects that everybody's working on.
Yeah, it's a really great show. I really enjoyed some of your most recent episodes. You just have like a really wide variety of like viewpoints that come on, which is great.
I tried,
totally. And what I really want to get you on to talk about today is like the name of your podcast, How Not to GM. I kind of want to flip it and say, if we could build the perfect GM, sets of skills, how they interact with their tables, all that kind of stuff, how would we do that? And so I kind of wanted to start from the basics of, if you were somebody who was building a GM or a DM from the ground up, what would you start with? What's the fundamental skill that you think like basically rules all the other skills?
The base layer. This is a good question. It's funny because you and I were just talking before we hit record about how I was listening to one of your more recent episodes and how all four of you have such vastly different ideas about how to run games. So like, it's always going to be subjective, you know, subjective about who thinks what is most important. But for me, I think the very base layer, like the most important thing, I think, is you need to have somebody who is good at reading people and handling social situations. And I don't mean that you have to be the most outgoing person ever. And I don't mean you have to have your master's in, you know, clinical psychology or whatever. But I think that it's important to be pretty good about reading people and understanding how they're feeling, And if they are enjoying themselves or not. That's like the biggest key indicator to me of if I'm doing a good job of running a game is if I can tell people are enjoying themselves or if they are clearly disconnected and so I need to make some adjustments.
I totally agree with that as like sort of a base level, like you have to be super like aware. We just recently
socially
had...
aware. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a really recent episode that is coming out very soon, and Franco and I always disagree on everything. But he was saying like the idea of everyone is sort of responsible for his own fun, like his or her own fun. I thought that was really like that. And I sort of agree with it. I sort of disagree with it. But
it's give and take, right?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
There's not a clear cut. When you're all interacting together, there's no clear cut. I have to be the one in charge of my own fun because you're inherently engaging in a social game in order to like feed off of each other. But at the same time, if you're not doing a good job of advocating for yourself or for your character, then it can be hard. Like if you just sit and play in a game that you hate with people that you hate, then it's true. You're not going to have very much fun. So you do. Yeah. There is stuff you have to do yourself. But also, I think the best players and GMs are the ones who can collaborate and work together to make sure other people are having fun also.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that I'm also interested in how you would see this implemented in a game. I know that everyone has different types of GM sort of styles. Like some people are heavy preppers, some people are improvisers, some people, you know, do a little bit of in between, that kind of thing. And I want to sort of ask you how you see this play out. If you're at a table, you're a GM who's like learning, you're trying to put these best practices into play. You see someone at the table who's disengaging, maybe not having fun, or like you just feel like the vibes are off. What do you think like a really great GM, like how would you handle that situation? Whether it's gameplay wise or social wise?
Yeah. For me, it's communication. And you can do it on, you know, a group chat or on Discord or, you know, whatever app you guys are using to communicate. You can do it in person. But to me, if and when I can see this kind of thing happening, I reach out to that person personally instead of in front of the group, you know, after the game's done or on the group chat where everyone can see their responses and try to like talk it out that way. I try to broach it delicately, right? But, you know, say, hey, how's it, you know, how are things going with you and your character? And are you enjoying this or that part? Just to see if they'll give me anything. And if not, then I might try to dig a little deeper and say, I just noticed that you're on your phone a lot or, you know, you seem kind of distracted, but in the nicest way possible. Like,
yeah, it is, totally.
I am not offended by this, but I can tell that something's up. Like, can we work together to make this fun for you again? Or, you know, is there anything that's been bothering you that we can dig into and fix? That's what I try to do.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I also think that like what you said about communication is just like the next big building block that I would put under there as well.
Yes.
Not only as a GM, if you are both attentive and willing to be proactive when it comes to communication, you're already like almost all the way there. Just because like, you know, people are busy, they have lives, this is a game. And sometimes they're just like, I don't, you know, I'm just going to leave it or whatever. But if you're a proactive GM and you reach out and be like, hey, like you said, like I saw that you weren't super into that session, like just wanted to check in. Is that just something going on in your life or are you not enjoying the game as a whole? And they're like, yeah, like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. And then you work with them to change it or whatever. Man, you're better than 80% of the GMs out there. You're already killing it.
Yes. For example, I'm calling out my brother here because I can, because he's my brother. last game session, everyone's paying super close attention and he is not. And it's because he's following a motorcycle race on his phone at the same time. And he's got like some money he could win or something. And so like, that's what's distracting him. Not maybe that the game isn't fun, but this other thing is occupying his mind. Because he's my brother and I'm running the game, I just kind of hand wave, but I'm not going to get offended or like call him out in front of everybody for that. It's just, it is what it is, you know. Totally. At some point, it's a game that we're all playing for fun. So if he's not engaged for one session, I'm not going to worry about it too much. But
yeah. So when it comes to a GM who's trying to build the start of a campaign for you, if you're a player about to sign up for a campaign or a session or whatever, what kind of thing can you sort of like be like, these are the check marks that I really want to see coming out of that before I sign in for a DM or a GM to like take me for, you know, a game that could last up to like 2 years or whatever? Like, what is
okay, so we're talking long form game.
Yeah, let's talk long form, just because I think that most people, they plan for that and then it kind of falls apart sooner. But let's say in the perfect world, this is a long term campaign.
Yeah. For me, I love working with the GM on my particular character's backstory and motivations, and then the stuff that I would like to accomplish or engage in, so that it's really clear cut. I don't want to like tell them exactly what to do, right? Like, well, I would like to be, you know, this at this level, and I want to be in charge of this guild by this time, or I want this magic item. I try to keep it much more open-ended than that, but just kind of give them some ideas to work with. So that's one is a GM who is willing to work with you on that kind of stuff if that's what you want to engage with. Some people just show up to eat snacks and roll dice and hang out, right? And that is totally fine. That is the right way to play. There's not really a wrong way where that's concerned. So, but I like someone who wants to build the story like that. I like when the game has kind of clear cut, what's the word I'm looking for? The feel of the game, the
atmosphere, the genre.
Yes. Yeah. Genre. Yeah. Atmosphere. That kind of thing. You know, the system might be dictating that heavily. But you know, if you're playing a very big fantasy game like D&D or whatever, there's a lot of different ways you could take that. Whereas, you know, a game like Call of Cthulhu is pretty cut and dry. Like, it's going to be horror and it's going to be this and that. I like knowing what kind of the feel is that the GM is going for, and that everyone is into that. And I feel like a good hook is nice too. Like, if they have the hook already, they're like, you're going to start doing this. And it's like, that sounds fun. And I could see a lot of different ways that this could branch off into other stuff. For instance, my buddy Matthew ran a game for us over the summer, a few summers ago, so I could have a little GMing break.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, you're going to be kind of like treasure hunters looking for this old ancient technology from a lost civilization, and you're going to be, you know, pretty high level. And I was like, yeah, because now I can think of a bunch of things that my character might be looking for, you know, knowledge that's lost that I'm trying to find. And that just, you know, adds a bunch of interesting layers. And it's easy to kind of extrapolate from there where things could go.
So the idea around kind of getting the atmosphere and the hook and everything, I totally... Uh-huh. I guess I'm pulling this directly from my experience where I really fucked up. Where I basically was like, hey everyone, what do you want? I just came off a campaign that I felt awesome about. I was like, this is like my A+ moment. It's just going to go up from here. I'm the best kind of thing.
Then
I was like, all right, everybody, tell me what you want to see from the next campaign. I'm so excited to do this. I'm going to make something for you guys. And then people were like, I want fantasy. I want spaceships. I want post-apocalypse. If I don't want it to be sad, and I want it to be like this and like this. And I was like, oh my God, how do I build this? And I just kind of like fell apart a little bit. So I guess for to poke at this a little bit too is when you're with a GM and they're really doing a great job as a player, like where is the line that they draw between this is what you get and you don't get upset. And this is what, like, I'm collaborating with you, because I agree the best times as a player I've had is like when you get to collaborate with the GM to make something really, really personalized and cool. But I've also had the experience of like basically not having a firm sense of direction as a GM because I'm trying to cater too much to players. So like, where is the middle ground in there? Like in your experience and with the people you've talked to, like, where do you think the kind of sweet spot is?
That's a great question. I've never tried to do what you described.
Usually, probably for the best.
I kind of pull the group and then they all say, "Ooh, yeah, that sounds fun." Like I give them a few of my ideas, like we could do this, or we could do this, or we could do this. And usually I let them pick from a few of my ideas. And
yeah,
then from
right.
there, I say, okay, what do you want to see from that kind of thing?
Yeah.
And luckily I've had consensus the past 2 to 3 times I've done that. It was like, all right, what's next? And everyone's like, yeah, we liked the part where we were sailing on a ship and doing piratey stuff. So we want to do more pirate stuff. And it's like, great, that's easy. Pirates, there's like so many movies and books and whatever to use to find tropes and stuff. And I can like figure out what parts of the piratey stuff everybody likes and kind of cater to them each. So that's how I bypassed that. I'm not saying that it was a bad idea, but you know, a post-apocalyptic fantasy space opera that's not sad.
Yeah.
Could be very difficult to pull off.
It's just, you know, I agree that like, I think that it's sort of like the TikTok thing of like, maybe people don't want so much choice, you know, like they kind of just want the cool things that they like to be given to them once they've sort of built that algorithm.
Delve into that social commentary.
So like what you're talking about, I think, is like the perfect sort of way to approach it too, of like, these are the things I noticed that people really liked in the last campaign. I'm kind of interested in these sort of things. Which ones really appeal to folks? And then they kind of pick. And then you're like, great, we're doing a pirate opera. It's going to be the great. Everyone's bards. This is the best. And I think that gives you a little bit more agency too in how you're doing it. Because like whatever you created from your last campaign is going to be something that you're kind of familiar with building in some way as well. So it kind of gets you to the next spot. So we have communication, what you're looking for at the table. And we also have how to sort of like approach starting something or as a player, what to look for as you're going into it. But let's actually talk about the sessions themselves, the makeup of a campaign. This is a huge epic sort of disagreement on tabletop between having a firm story and sort of like GM led experience versus a player led experience. The schism, the great schism. But the two sort of ways that I kind of think people can think about it is sort of like, are you being told a story and you're an active participant in it? Or is it sort of totally off rails? It's just like exploring. Players have total agency and the GM is there to facilitate. I have my opinions on this, but like, where in your experience, where, like, what do you run, I guess, is a good place to start, and then we can kind of talk about what sort of the ideal experience we've had as players and things like that.
To be honest, the vast majority of games that I've run and my group as it stands now, which is like mostly my original group, with new people added in and then gone. And, you know, it's kind of been continuous ish, with a few of the same people. They are pretty content to just take the hooks that I give them, with a few caveats here and there. They might message me and say, hey, it would be fun if I could do this, or, you know, my character is thinking they want to do something like this now. And so I'll obviously, you know, add that in. They're very much like, we just want to hang out with other adults and, you know, like have a little, normal social time, and also, you know, play pretend. That's kind of like, it's not necessarily the game I feel like I'm comfortable running, because I would love to at some point run a game where they write me, you know, pages of backstory, and like we're kind of like building the world together, and then we like work together to create this awesome epic story. But it just it just hasn't happened. And the people I play with are really busy, and it's just kind of like this is their fun time in the week to go hang out. So they're just very content to follow the story hook. So I've done a little bit of homebrew. I've done a little bit of module stuff. Because if they're not like trying to dictate the story, however it goes, then I might as well just, you know, read it out of a book and then adapt it as needed. So I've done both. The big long campaign that I finished about a year ago was all homebrew. And then since then I've been running, published stuff, but, that's kind of my experience. But on the flip side, that game I was talking about with my friend who ran it a few summers ago was very much like, I think this sounds fun, but where would you all want to take this? And so each of us kind of said, well, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that. And he built it based on what we wanted to do. And that was a lot of fun, too. And because it was during, shutdown times, no one had any other thing to do on whatever night it was that we were playing. And so it was easy for us to all to show up every week and for there to be continuity. And, you know, it was very, very tight. Like the narrative was tight. It wasn't like, how am I going to figure out how to do the story if these two players just aren't magically there for, you know, a few hours of game time and then are again. It worked out very well for us. But yeah, I really like both kinds. And like I said, I would love to run a huge, epic, pulpy story like that someday. But my experience mostly has been running games that are very much like, I will pull them and see what they're interested in. But usually it's just kind of like, okay, here's a story hook. Here's a hook. Here's a hook. And they just kind of follow it and they go get the MacGuffin and then they go talk to the wizard on the hill. And it's just kind of... They follow my plots one by one.
I sort of think that, like, you know, the going directly to what you were saying about like shutdown times, I feel like I really started GMing during that time where I had way more time. And I got into a mode of how to run things of like, this is how you do it. It's way like dividends. Everyone is like having a good time. Like, I think that this is awesome. I'm telling a cool story with them. And then like every time I've tried to attempt it afterwards, I was just like, who's got time for this? So I really feel you on the like the desire to run like this sort of like epic thing again. But just like how is anyone with like a job and everything supposed to do that?
That is the tricky part. To be honest, I've always wanted to do it, and I've been running games for long enough now that I feel like I could. Like, I've done enough thinking about games and thinking about worlds and thinking about whatever else that I could pretty easily take way less time but still build something really cool instead of putting in the hours and hours of prep that I used to. So definitely experience has made that much more attainable. I definitely think it'll happen eventually, but you know, it might be when my kids get older and they're my captive audience.
And on that note, we're going to head to some ad breaks and then we'll come back with Derek of How Not to DM.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
Welcome back to Tabletop. We're talking to Derek from How Not to DM. This is a good discussion about how to be an awesome, perfect GM. It is attainable. You should do it. We're telling you how right now. And I kind of want to, before the break, we were talking about like story and we were talking about how to start sort of something, how to welcome people into a campaign. Now I kind of want to talk about actually building stuff. In your opinion, what is sort of like a perfect session composition? Like, what are you trying to build when you are creating a session for your table? Whether it's, you know, you're only meeting for an hour or you're meeting for 5 hours once a month or whatever, they all kind of take different things. But
yes,
what are the core elements that you're looking for out of each session that you're trying to build in?
Yeah, I've only really run 1 hour sessions at conventions, so yeah, I haven't done a lot of prep.
That's the big place where you find those.
Right. And those were all pre-written, and it was very simple, like a teensy little bit of role play, a teensy bit of exploration, and then one combat, and then it's done kind of thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's not a bad pattern for a 1 hour. But the problem is, if you're doing like 1 hour sessions, but it's not just a little one shot, you're definitely going to take an hour and do like one thing during that hour. It might be like one meeting with some visiting dignitary and she has a bunch of questions for you, or one meeting, or, you know, one hour's worth of like traipsing through a swamp to try to find something or whatever it might be. So, hours are trickier. I feel like you probably just have time for one or maybe two things. You kind of have the next thing planned and ready just in case. For me, the sweet spot has been 3 to 5 hours. That's definitely where we kind of do or play most. Usually Friday, Saturday nights, pretty classic. We bring, you know, some cheese and crackers and we roll some dice. But for the 3 to 5 hour sessions, I really do try to have like a little bit of each pillar just in case, because I feel like it's fun to balance things that way. And by including a little bit of each aspect of, you know, traditional role playing games, that means that each person's character who's good at particular things will have an opportunity to be good at those things, to track someone or to, you know, learn some information or you know, win a fight. So, that's kind of my goal, is to give
as a quick sort of like add on to that point of how flexible do you tend to be? For me, like, my whole vibe is just like, say yes. I come from an improv background, and so like that's how I know to tell sort of like an unscripted story, is like say yes to whatever someone offers, figure out how to make it like bring it into the wider world, justify all that kind of stuff. How do you, when you're sort of building a session, you have the all, because I do the same thing where I build bits of the pillars throughout, because some people might really love combat, some people might hate combat, and all they want to do is talk to weird NPCs, you know what I mean? So like, you gotta have it all,
both in your game, and so you gotta figure out how to like make them all happy.
So you have to bounce back and forth.
In my current game, I have one person who loves the intricacies and the politics and the snooping around and like talking to everybody and figuring out what the motivations are and having group meetings, and then I've got a few other people who just want to slash and hack, and it's always fun. If you can get the one group who just wants to hack and slash into the role play stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, and you can get the person who likes the intricacies and that stuff, and tie the combat in well enough with the politics and whatever that's been going on, that's when you really, really cook them with gas. But
absolutely. I was kind of say too on that point, is like, how do you as a GM sort of like handle the unexpected around how your players are interacted with the session that you've kind of proposed to them? And as you start kind of like, you know, you're going through the session, you have all these little, the sprinkle all the little bits in, and then the barbarian or whatever is just like, I'm going to go find like a pack of wolves to tame or whatever. You're like, what are you talking about? That's not even like part of this thing. The famous kind of example we gave in a recent episode is like, what do you do when you have a thing where like the sun god is about to die and the sun's going to be extinguished and your party's just like, I'm chasing this goose around town?
Oh, wow. I guess chase the goose. But for me, again, coming with experience, having run enough games and thought enough about worlds and stuff, I am pretty flexible and can, I usually can roll with punches. They zig when I expect them to zag, but I can still make something work. But again, that came with a lot of time. My very first session I ever ran, I've told the story a dozen times, so apologies to people who are listening to this. You're like, we know. My very first session, I had them go find this NPC in the woods who was like the last person of this cultist camp that had just evacuated. And he's like, oh, you'll never figure out the plan. And instead of arresting him and taking him in and questioning him, my brother was immediately like, I don't like this guy. I wait for the next farmer to come with a cart and I pay him 5 gold to take him as far away from here as possible. And I was like, well, all of this information I was supposed to give you is now gone. What am I going to do? So, yeah, I've had to be scrabbling and scrambling from day one. still makes me laugh so much. I like to try to be as flexible as possible. I'm not one of those who's got the flow chart of like, if this, then this, and this, then this, because infinite possibilities. There's no way you can plan for all of them. Don't do that to yourself. I try to just think about like, if I have the characters, the NPCs well formed enough in my head, or the factions, you know, whatever is involved. If I have them well formulated enough in my head, I can make a decision. Okay, if they're doing this, then these people would make this decision, or you know, whatever it might be, and I can kind of make the world change and shift depending on their decisions. Try not to railroad if possible. Sometimes it is just the illusion of choice that keeps that going. But I definitely try not to plan too much minutia so that when they do unexpected things, I can easily fit what, you know, other stuff that I've thought of into what I was going to do.
Yeah. And on this kind of similar vein, one thing that I am always super fascinated with is like how GMs deal with failure. So like in this example of your brother being like, I hate this guy, get him the fuck out of here. How do you, because some GMs will just be like, well, you lost that information forever. You know what I mean? I have never really played that way, but it also is like, how do you add danger in the failure that people kind of need to make a good story without it being inhibiting to enjoying the game? You know what I mean? So like in your mind, how does a great GM handle like either failure at the table or, you know, just like the unexpected that is derailing? And like, if you are to follow your story or whatever that you're having, it's like, you lost that key forever. Like you're just not able to get through the magic lock, I guess. Like how does somebody handle that in your mind?
Well, in that very first example, luckily it was like a 3-shot of 1-hour sessions that we were playing at lunch at work. So like not a super big deal. I could scramble and figure something out for a few minutes and then write what was going to happen later.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't, I found other ways to give them the information and plot hooks. It just wasn't as easy as questioning him. They had to go figure out a different way to get it. I don't know. Instead of like rewriting a totally different story, I feel like it's easier to just find a different place to give them information, find a different place to put that dungeon or that faction or that monster. And it'll probably be fine. Like they don't know what you have and haven't planned, and so it can all seem planned if you're doing it well enough. That's always fun when at the end of the session they're like, man, this was great and that was great and that was great, and you're just like sitting there like, yeah, none of that, like I had no idea any of that was gonna happen, but I made it all up and it worked out. Now I just gotta write notes, honestly, so that I don't forget all the stuff I made up.
With almost zero exceptions, my best moments or most favorite NPCs are like all the things that my players love are things that came out of like a complete desperation to try to get people back on track.
It's like when you procrastinate, or when I procrastinate when I was in school, I would wait till the last day to write the paper or the last day to do the report or whatever. And I would do it all in like the shortest amount of time and it would turn out okay. Not great, probably not good for my health. All that stress that I was building up, but it worked out. And it's the same thing with GMing. Like they make a split decision or a split second decision to do something. And you're like, okay, I guess then this is going to happen. And it just works out.
Yeah. So as we sort of come to like the latter part of the episode, I want to sort of now pick your brain about you know, what you have learned in all of your interviews and all of the games you've done. Mm. What are the worst things that a GM can do, and how do people stay away from them?
Yeah. Okay. So the two things that get mentioned the very most on my show of people when I ask as part of the show, because it's called How Not to DM, I ask everybody, what are some of the big examples of how not to DM that you've run into at your table, right? Like what were the big mistakes you made and what lessons did you learn from them? Because that's the point, right? Learning from each other's mistakes. I also like that I can humanize these DMs and GMs we put on a pedestal a little bit. It's easy to be like, wow, they're so good, but you know, everyone has screwed up, right? So yeah, the two things that get mentioned the very most are, number one, railroading, and number two, not doing any kind of like session zero. And then introducing stuff you haven't planned that really bothers people or, you know, is triggering to them and that kind of thing. Yeah. There's been some really sad examples of that second one.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that I encourage. But yeah, railroading is easy. Like everyone who's run a few games has heard that term and probably knows at least a little bit about what it means. So I don't feel like I have to cover that one as much, but yeah, the session zero is big because there's just a lot of stuff out there that people have experienced that you have no idea. Right. Like I said, my brother is one of my players and he runs some games for us here and there. And he and I spent the first, his life up to 18 years and whatever, like we've spent a ton of time together. And since then we've lived relatively close to each other and there's still like so much of his life that I have no idea what he's experienced, what he's been through, even though we talk a lot. You just don't know what people have been through. And so it's important to make sure that you're not going to cover stuff that people are not comfortable with. The big example from my show, just a little light spoiler, is one guy, he started a game. And in the first session, he did something with, I think, an unborn child or a stillborn child or something like that. And one of the players who he knew really well had a miscarriage that he didn't know about. And it was super triggering for her. And he said she never played with him again. Right. There's like he apologized profusely. He said they're on good terms personally, but it just ruined that gaming relationship, right?
Yeah.
And that's not something you want to deal with. You know, nobody wants to do that to somebody else. All of these were kind of mistakes, right? But it's...
Yeah. And to your point about that specifically, it's like you can think that something is like a great hook or a great piece of conflict or like something that will cause like great drama that like you think is, and it could be something that you're uncomfortable with, but you're like, oh man, I like watch all these shows. Like I watch The Witcher and like, you know, in The Witcher video games or whatever, there is literally a thing about like unborn children creating a ghost that is like either, you know, bad or good or whatever. And you could be like, that's a great idea. I want to use it. But then to your point, it's just like, you don't know what other people have gone through. And also things that are just mere plot devices can be real, or at least more real for other people. And you have to do a session zero.
Yeah.
It's so simple. And it can be so fun. Like session zeros can be so fun because it's setting the tone and everyone's like building characters together maybe, or like talking about their backstories, really introducing themselves. Like it can be a blast. So just do it.
Yeah. Something else to know. You may have done a session zero with somebody before and you think they know what is and isn't, you know, a line or a veil for them. And guess what? Within the year or whatever that you've played, they've had more experiences. And so it's important to remember to redo that. For instance, it's pretty like open, but after having kids, like so much more media is like different for me. And I'm not, you know, like, I don't know if I would put certain things about children in lines or veils at this point, but because I'm usually running the games, not playing.
I control the world.
But yeah, like before I had kids, I was so jaded, you know, like nothing bothered me. But now that I have them, it's like very different because that's like a real thing for me where I can I could think about how it would impact me personally having them and something happening to them. So yeah, remember that people's lives are constantly changing and they're constantly having new experiences. And so it's important to re-up that whenever you are doing something new to make sure that everybody's still on the same page.
Yeah, I think that is such a good example of what not to do. One thing I'm going to add on to the railroading, because I also agree railroading can suck. But I also think that people don't quite like railroading can mean we all kind of assume that we mean the same things. One thing that I specifically think is that happens more often with GMs that they don't think is railroading, but it actually is and is way more detrimental than just having like a firm path of a story. Like people run out of modules all the time, and that's sort of railroading because there's a story in there that you're going through. The thing that I think all GMs have to stay away from is like fixation on a specific thing happening or not happening or whatever. Because if you say like, okay, in my story, this book is like a talking book and it knows the secret that's going to reveal this huge area of the world or like get them into a dungeon or whatever. And it's so important, but they have to pass like a 15 arcana skill check and they get fixated on like, you got to pass it. Like you actually don't control whether they pass that or not.
No.
And like, if you get so fixated on like one specific thing or a specific path, that I think is the most detrimental railroading that can happen. And it can be tied to mechanics. It can be tied to social encounters or whatever. Like, oh, they didn't talk to the maid that knew the killer, so they'll never know who the killer is or whatever. Like that is just like a fixation that is just going to ruin your game.
Right. If anyone has ever played the old point and click adventure games on a PC, they will know this pain. You get to a certain point and you're supposed to have a key that unlocks the door and you don't have the key. And you gotta, like, there's this whole game that you have to go click through to find the thing. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than, like, being stuck at a spot and not being able to progress at all because you don't know what you don't know and they're not going to give you any hints or, like, help you figure it out. So, definitely don't do that.
Yeah, it's like taking the worst part of video games and putting it into your TTRPG.
Really. Really, though. Yeah. Other than the toxic chat rooms and voice chat.
that could be at tables, too, but we'll talk about that another time, maybe.
Okay, so those are the top two. I feel like there's some honorable mentions I can do for like how not to DM. Just like what you said is a good one, like making something happen even though nobody wants that to happen. That's no fun. I feel like unless it's done really well, the whole taking everyone's stuff and dumping them on a deserted island trope is overplayed. Do not do that. It's so boring when you get all your stuff taken away because like they spent all this time accumulating the stuff and accumulating the powers and then all of a sudden they can't use them for a super long time. You know, that's no fun. Don't do that. Anything that they've worked really hard for, unless there's like a good narrative reason and they're kind of expecting it, don't just like take stuff from them. That's probably a common one that people have talked about.
Can I run one by you too that I've been kind of percolating on for a little while, but I want to get someone. This is the first time I've asked someone, so tell me what you think. So I have this friend who is always saying like, don't surprise the player, surprise the character. And I think what he was talking about is like, don't spend all of your time trying to get the characters to be like, the players to be like, oh my God, I get it. Like you're a genius. You've crafted this story. Instead, get the characters to be like in game, be like, oh shit, the count has been evil the whole time. But you can have like a way better narrative arc if like your players might know, you know what I mean? And then they get to a point where they're like, this is the point where the actual people we are playing, the characters in the game, realize it, and then they get to have that moment together. I'm still kind of percolating on this one, but I want to run that by you and see what you think.
I think it greatly depends on your players and your table. If they are committed to the role play and committed to my character doesn't know what I know, so I can have all these theories, but my character doesn't. If they're committed to that, Sure. My experience has been that nobody plays like that unless it's for like an actual play or something and is like incredibly committed. I haven't played with a lot of actors or improv folks, so perhaps your experience is different from mine. But yeah, I feel like most people I play with, whatever their thoughts are their characters' thoughts. And so if I'm going to pull a fast one on them, it has to be on both of them. It can't be on just the characters. so yeah. I don't know. I'm probably not the person to ask.
I think that's a good point. Like, I think also one thing for all GMs who either future or current is to whatever is working for you right now or something that might be like amazing. It could like never work again for like other tables. You know what I mean? Like there's a kind of weird chemistry that happens when you have a set group together where it's like whatever this group decides is awesome is like maybe will never work for any other group, but this group just fucking loves it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It would be very hard to set up the same scenario twice at any given time just because of the sheer number of decisions people can make leading up to something. Like you could run a one shot 10 different times and it's going to be different every time, right? I wrote one a few years ago. I did a little Kickstarter and I did some play testing and then I did some like playing at local game stores and stuff for folks. And yeah, every single time it was totally different. Like they solved every problem in such a different way that like you couldn't replicate the same thing. It's, I don't know, like when you're writing a module, you set up these set pieces, right? Like, okay, a classic example, spoilers for Lost Mine of Phandelver, which has been out forever. The very first dungeon, there's like, if they go here, then, you know, these goblins set this trap or they come up from behind them. And there's like a bunch of different steps. Like if this happens, then this, if this happens, then this. Yeah. It's easier to set it up like that, but you know, don't get too complex with it. But
yeah,
like still the few times I've run people through that Lost Mine dungeon, they've gone totally different paths and totally different outcomes. And you know, there's no way to like ever duplicate the same thing twice, really.
Yeah. I'm building a module right now and I've run it for probably four different groups and different things have happened from the entire setting sinking into the ocean because of choices to like people just driving away from the town and being fine. It's like completely different depending on how people interact with the setting. So
cataclysmic, I feel or, you know, like driving somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty great. Yeah. So it's called Candle Cove. It's if you've ever played Monster of the Week, it's a Powered by the Apocalypse game. And I made sort of like a little mini mystery that is set in a town in the north of Maine that has like a weird record where you're sent there by some agency that you create with whoever you're playing with. And you're there to investigate a couple of deaths that have happened there. And this town has never had a recorded murder. So it's kind of like a weird sort of thing. You go in there and then it's like, you know, you have 5 days to try to figure out as much as you can and you can leave at any time. So that's, you know, some people just leave with some of the mystery done and some people
sink
the entire town into the ocean.
that sounds really fun. I have Monster of the Week. It's on my long list of books that I have purchased, but still haven't gotten to play yet. So
it's so good. It is my favorite TTRPG. When I get this thing done, maybe I can run you through it with someone.
I am very down. Very down.
That'd be awesome. Speaking of being really down, I want to know where people can find you either on social media, where people can find your podcast. How is the best way for them to get into your show's orbit? And I know that we also have another thing that we want to point some attention to. So Derek, where can people get into How Not to DM?
Yeah, so How Not to DM, chances are it is on the same exact app you are listening to this show on. So you can go find the search bar and search for How Not to DM or How Not to Dungeon Master. And yeah, the show is very similar to this show in that each episode is going to be a different conversation. And so you can kind of go in whatever order you want, whatever order sounds interesting and fun. Each week I have a new guest on. We talk about how they run games. We talk about their greatest triumphs and their biggest mistakes, like we talked about earlier. And then we spend the second half of the show talking about their cool projects, whether it be writing games or designing, new modules or that kind of thing. Kickstarters, people who make dice, people who make music for games, you know, like background music that you can play. I've had a former NFL player on there. I've had all sorts of different folks.
Wow, that's a big get.
So I've had all sorts of different folks on there from lots of different walks of life, lots of different corners of the TTRPG space. But the common thread is they all run games and they all love doing it and they all have different experiences that they can share with us. So yeah, you can find that there, or you can go to linktree.com/HN2DM. That's 5 characters, HN2DM. And that will have the links to my socials and to other places you can find the show. So yeah, listen in whatever order, you know, go find the people you are familiar with or go listen to one just because it sounds interesting to you. I am currently on a mid-season break in my 4th season. My editor and producer, JR, has had some family emergencies come up. And so I'm giving him a break to, spend some time with his family. He and his wife have recently become parents. They've welcomed a new daughter into the world. But the mother and daughter spent a few days in the NICU. He's in the Philippines as well. So they don't have health insurance there in the Philippines. Everything is out of pocket. And so he's got a large mountain of bills that's staring him down in the face right now. So if you have a few dollars you'd like to send his way, that would be amazing. He would appreciate it. I would appreciate it. And you can contact me via whatever social platform you're on. You can, send me a message or at me or whatever, and I will point you to how to donate directly to him. So, I hope to be jumping back into my season 4 soon after he has had some time to kind of catch up on the mountain of work that has been building up on his plate, as you can imagine. And, we will go from there. But all the listeners out there, make sure to stay tuned because your very own Nick will be joining me on there hopefully very soon.
Yeah, definitely. And all of those links will also be in the show notes. Go down, check it out, including all of the socials so that you can connect with Derek if you would like to contribute. I think that I was talking to you. You were saying that it's like $500 a day that he's going to be like working through to get this, this new kiddo. Get this kiddo all set and set up for an awesome childhood. So we can all do our part. Derek, thank you so much for coming on. This is a blast.
It was a ton of fun. Having listened to you talk a lot, it's always fun to jump in and be the one talking to you and say, oh, he really is like that. He really is that fun and interesting to talk to. So a note to How Not to DM listeners, if you're listening to this because you knew I was on the show, you should go check out the rest of Tabletopped when you have a chance, because the whole gang has a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Nick has talked to a few of other people that have been on my show. I listened to Grant from Game Master Monday today as well.
Grant's
just
great.
Just to kind of prepare for this. Yeah, Grant is awesome.
Go check out his podcast, awesome Game Master too. Monday. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You should go check that one out too.
Yeah, and I gotta say, for everyone listening here, go check out How Not to DM. It is a really great show. The 2 episodes before the sort of announcement of the current break he's on have been great. I listened to them to prep for this interview, and now I'm hooked. So, at the very least, Derek, you got one extra listener out of this.
I just have to get on more shows, I guess, and slowly convert the rest of them. Okay, it's a mountain, but I can climb it.
Yeah. Well, Derek, thank you so much for coming on Tabletopped. And everyone else, if you like Tabletopped, we release an episode every Monday. We talk about everything TTRPGs and storytelling, and we're going to see you next week.